It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to Wednesday's 9 till noon show. And this is the 14th of August. It's just turning 5 minutes past nine, and we are all energized, full of energy for the next 3 hours. Hopefully you'll stick with us. We have lots lined up, the usual mix of informative stuff, newsy stuff, you know yourself, and we want you involved throughout the course of the morning. It is August, which means effectively no one texts. I don't say, well, that's not quite the case, but it's always a quieter month. What happens? Do your phones go missing? Anyway, you're still texting great numbers, but you just can see August is just that. It's a different type of a month. Anyway, we are here, 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25000. If you want to pass on any information to us, an email's coming to us via this address, comments@highlandradio.com. You can watch the show as well, of course, on your smart TV, your Fire Stick, on YouTube. We're at Highland Radio Ireland. You'll see us live there. And also on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport, and on the X platform, which is kind of an interesting platform to stream onto. And you can see why you get some, because the viewing figures are slightly amplified, just a little bit sometimes, as they try and get people to stream more and more on that platform. I've just noticed that. But anyway, still healthy real figures there too. Let's have a look at the newspapers this morning. The Finn Valley Voice: credit union mortgage expansion to benefit Finn Valley. Your local credit union is traditionally not seen as the first port of call for would-be households seeking a mortgage, but that's changing, and it's likely to change even more dramatically before the end of the year, says South Donegal TD Marion Harkin. On to the Nationals now, and did you hear about this tax credit story? It kind of came out over the weekend and on Monday night, state Monday off, and there was a €750 tax credit proposed for those under 25, and I thought, all right, okay, under 25, so they work as hard as anyone else, why not give them a little bump? And then I learned or read, and I'm not really quite sure, I haven't fully read the article, that this was seen as an incentive to stop young people emigrating abroad after they finish college. So, like, I can't imagine a situation whereby a young person had their bags packed heading to Australia for a year and they think, oh, a €750 tax credit. Mom, Dad, I'm getting back in the car and going home. But anyway, someone believes it should be higher. I still don't think this figure is going to be high enough. But anyway, a tax credit for young people aged 25 and under should be up to €5,000 and not €750, according to the chair of the Dáil's powerful finance committee. Enterprise Minister Peter Burke had previously said a €750 tax credit should be put in place for young people in a bid to stop them emigrating abroad after they finish college. He said the tax cut should be central to Fine Gael's policy if it's not brought in under the budget. The proposal is included in the pre-budget submission for the Department of Enterprise. But Oireachtas Finance Committee Chair John McGuinness of Fianna Fáil TD said the proposed credit was too low and should be thousands of euro to incentivise young people to stay in this country. I absolutely support any measures that keeps the well-educated people who live in Ireland at home, working within the health service or wherever else. It'll take a hell of a lot more than the €750 tax credit to encourage people to come back here. Yeah, I don't even think 5,000 is enough. Now, I know what the TD was saying here. I absolutely support any measure that keeps the well-educated people who live in Ireland home. But I would like to see measures that keep all people at home. Classing people as well-educated doesn't sit very well with me. We need people, everyone who lives here, really, to stay at home and contribute in all different ways, be it well-educated or highly skilled, for that matter, as well, in other things. We still have that sort of a casual language, don't we? Whereas, you know, we are judged better if we've got a better education, when many of us left school early and still managed to get on. But anyway, who do you think are the top two companies that people complain about, consumer complaints? I think you definitely guess one. I don't know if you'd guess the other. Let's see. Complaints to Ireland's consumer watchdog jumped sharply in the first half of the year, with telecoms operator Air and Ryanair, the two companies most likely to be referenced by callers to the helpline. According to the new report from the Competition and Consumer Protection Commission published today, queries and complaints from the public increased by 18% between January and June when compared with the same period in 23. More than 20,000 contacts were managed by the watchdog, which is calling for legislative changes to give it the power to impose larger fines for serious offences, including fines that represent a percentage of businesses' turnover. Air was the company most frequently identified by callers to the CCPC helpline, with the company being referenced by 356 of those who made a contact, followed by Ryanair in third place, was Sky, followed by Vodafone, and Harvey Norman was in fifth place, 234. Surprised at that. I've never had any dealings with Harvey Norman, but the other kind of, service providers, broadband, TV, flights, stuff that people engage with an awful lot. Harvey Norman in there in fifth. I'm not too pleased about that. That was the Irish Times, by the way. Something we might reference a little later on, and this is in the Irish Daily Mail. later on, by the way, we're going to be talking about this traffic watch. We mentioned it last week. It's a new portal from An Garda Síochána that allows people to log instances of criminality, dangerous driving, that type of thing. So we're going to be talking about that a little later on. But also we might talk about this. A quarter, one in four drivers who died on Irish roads in the past decade weren't wearing a seatbelt. It has emerged as the death toll for this year has risen above 120. Data released by the Road Safety Authority shows 170 drivers who died in collisions on Irish roads in the past decade were not wearing a seatbelt. There were 1,687 deaths in the period, including 688 while driving. Now, if you factor in how many people, surveys show how many people don't wear seatbelts, I don't have the exact figure in my head. I will get it for you. But not people not wearing a seatbelt in terms of fatalities and crashes are way overrepresented. So you could say, yeah, what three in four were wearing a seatbelt? It doesn't work like that. The absolute majority of people wear seatbelts when driving. So the fact that one in four who die in collisions aren't wearing a seatbelt means that that cohort are incredibly overrepresented, if that makes sense. The RSA could not determine whether a driver was wearing a seatbelt in 21% of fatalities in the past 10 years. The number of drivers who died in crashes who were not wearing a seatbelt in seatbelt-equipped vehicles has decreased from 23 in 2019 to 6 last year and 3 so far in 2024. But if you cover the 10 years, incredibly overrepresented. On to the Star this morning. This is a story we've been covering for quite some time now, and that's the role of pharmacies, and could they have an increased role? A, because they have the skill set and the knowledge, but also, two, it could free up spaces for others to go to GP's practices. But it's still at this stage what should happen rather than what's going to happen. But I'll read on. People should be able to get prescriptions for 8 common conditions at pharmacies, a report has recommended. A task force on expanding the role of pharmacists found that pharmacists should be able to prescribe medication for uncomplex health issues. It's recommended 8 common conditions that can be managed by pharmacists: allergic rhinitis, something to do with the nose, I imagine, cold sores, conjunctivitis, impetigo, oral thrush, shingles, uncomplicated UTIs, cystitis, and vulvovaginal thrush. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly said it represented a radical departure in the role pharmacists play in Ireland. So those are the 8 conditions that they talk of. Would you like to see that happen? We're going to be chatting to Tom Murray a little later on in the programme, of course. He has been a long-time advocate. He is the president of the Pharmacy Union, a long-time advocate of increased role in healthcare provision in this area by pharmacists. Is that something you would welcome? I mean, I haven't heard the public really polled on this. Let us know on the usual numbers. On to the Irish Daily Mirror now. And Garda Chiefs are close to buying 2 water cannon trucks from an overseas police force, which may cost around €500,000. This is the road seemingly we're going down. Many people might think it's the right move. Others might say, what? The procurement process for the permanent water cannon is progressing after Garda Commissioner Drew Harris made a case to the government for them following the Dublin riots last November. The most likely scenario, according to sources, is they purchase two second-hand water cannon trucks from Holland. However, other countries are being looked at as options. Sources told the Mirror the option to purchase the cannon from Holland is being considered, and also are a couple of other options. The actual cost will depend on what option Garda, where they buy them. And how much they cost is not really the story here. There's no point reading that nonsense on. That don't mean that with any disrespect to the writers of the article. I mean, the key issue here is that half a million is going to be spent on two water cannons. And is that the route we want to go down? That if people are out protesting, that someone makes a call and says, right, we're going to blast them? Or is that what's required? Do you think that, you know, enough is enough? If people are misbehaving, they deserve the water cannon. Again, text us or call us. And lastly, in The Sun this morning, 10 prisoners, including a convicted killer, were rushed to hospital after overdosing on a dangerous substance. The Irish Sun has learned, as all papers have, the prisoners housed in Port Leash prison were transferred from the jail after falling ill yesterday. At least three of the men are in a serious condition and they are all being treated at the hospital based in the County Leash town. Medics will establish what they took, but prison authorities do not believe it is the nitazine-type substance that ravaged Dublin's Mountjoy prison some weeks ago. But it just goes to show, firstly, how accessible drugs are in prison, and also, too, how well, dangerous drugs are, I suppose you could say. Fiona O'Malley is CEO of Turn to Me, and Fiona joins us on the programme now. Hiya, Fiona.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
No, it's great to have you on the programme. Right, okay, so the tradwife trend, how do you view it?
It's very dangerous, very damaging. It's important to note that the tradwife trend is different to housewives. It's an idealisation of a return to traditional gender roles where women are expected to focus solely on homemaking and total submissiveness to their husbands. Oftentimes they look like Stepford wives. They're very glamorous. They get up at 4 or 5 in the morning to you know, get ready and to look very glamorous. A lot of them will focus on extreme organic and making everything from scratch. There's an influencer, tradwife influencer, and she makes even bubble gum from scratch. And a lot of them have a lot of children. The biggest ones have around 8 to 10 children. And apart from being regressive and damaging in terms of gender equality, it sets an unrealistic lifestyle expectation. The vast majority of people won't be able to do this. And also they're quite dishonest and quite misleading. A lot of them depict this type of lifestyle as a simpler lifestyle, but there's nothing simple about staying at home or easy about staying at home with 8 to 10 children. And a lot of them also have help for the work that they're doing around the house. And a lot of them do come from generational wealth to be able to make this kind of lifestyle choice and to stay at home. The vast majority of households in Ireland today to live a luxurious lifestyle would obviously need two incomes.
Yeah, and of course, listen, if you post on social media now, you get paid, right? So there's nothing to guarantee that these people are actually living these lifestyles. They've found a niche and they've found an audience. And if people are praising them and criticizing them, it doesn't matter. As long as they get the traffic, they get the checks from TikTok. So it might actually just be nothing. It might not actually be real in its sort of originality. But obviously then, you know, people see this and see it as real.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it is false in that sense. And it tends to certainly overly romanticize an overly simplified past, an idealized past. And it ignores the complexities and the inequalities that women faced. And it misleadingly presents this as a universally fulfilling option for modern women and a universally accessible option. But it's just simply not accessible. And in relation to people talking about this, you know, being an option, which it's simply not, even though the trad wife trend is quite strong in America and the majority of these big trad wife influencers are American, a lot of them are now popping up across the UK. So it is quite a worrying trend that we see. And not only obviously does it undermine gender equality, it can lead to real harm if people, I suppose, embrace these kind of things that they're led to believe being a simpler way of life. These dynamics can lead to emotional and psychological harm. They can lead to feelings of being trapped, resentment, dependency, coercive control, and even abuse. And it's important to emphasize that healthy relationships are built on mutual respect, equality, and shared responsibilities. And these are values that the trad wife trend directly contradicts.
But with that in mind, is it not up to all individuals, all women, to live the lives as they see fit? And if they, you know, see the content produced by these influencers and they have the resources, maybe their other half isn't a well-paid job, I don't know. I'm not even comfortable making this argument, but just for the purpose of the conversation, is it not up to, you know, women to make that choice themselves? And the women that choose not to, you know, are still empowered and have the strength to say, that's not for me, this is the life I want, and it's live and let live. That if some women want to buy into that and it suits their family structure, well then, go at it.
Absolutely. So choice is a vital element to feminism and modern feminism. And whilst choice is vital, when you promote one lifestyle and as an ideal, it pressures other people to conform and it disregards diverse aspirations and paths to empowerment, because empowerment looks different for different people. And this trad wife lifestyle is often influenced by societal pressure and traditional gender norms, and it limits genuine choice and it reinforces outdated roles rather than empowering true freedom. Some of the trad wife influencers will argue that they feel empowered by giving up all their power to their husbands, and they feel more empowered by limiting their decision-making abilities in the home. There's obviously something inherently nonsensical about that and self-contradictory about that. If you're trying to argue that you are more empowered by giving up power, that doesn't make sense, and that's quite a dangerous argument to make. And it really undermines, as I say, decades of equality and the fight for equality. And it creates a lot of other problems and a lot of other red flags.
Yeah, there are, and maybe you see this as completely different, but others might not, so I'll put it to you. There's also a trend whereby, I don't know if it's a trend, I'm sure it is, I've seen so many videos along these lines, and you know yourself, you look at one and that's it, whereby, you know, women in the late 30s, 40s are celebrating the fact that they're out living their lives, no need for a babysitter. Could that not be harmful too to other women who've chosen to have a family, that are, that it could damage their mental health, and that they feel sort of maybe restricted in their role when they see, you know, this trend of women celebrating the fact that they've got no children and can do whatever they like?
So I suppose, again, the main argument in modern feminism is the choice that should be available to women. So if women choose to have a corporate job and choose to have it all, in inverted commas, that's good. And if people choose to stay at home and they come to that arrangement with their family, that's fine. But I suppose every decision has consequences. So, for example, if you decide to focus all of your attention and your energy on your career, and if you work 24/7, that for either gender means that you won't have the same type of quality in your social life. You might not have the same type of rest and relaxation in your life. And equally, if you put all your eggs in one basket and you decide that you're going to take on an ultra traditional role and you're going to reject any type of modern, I suppose, values in feminism.
That would be the extreme. I get you. And I'm not being argumentative in any way, Fiona. I hope you understand that. But it just sounds like it sounds like that we respect all women's rights to choose whichever role we like, except this one, if you know what I mean. So women are free to express themselves in any way, but if they want to sort of go into that traditional route, like the old books, it used to be funny 5 years ago, you know, how to be good, you would see books that were published in the 50s and 60s about how to be a good housewife, you know, and that was hilarious. And we can never go back to that. But, I mean, like, should we be judging or criticising people if they genuinely choose to live that life, if that's what they, if that's what makes them happy? I mean, just because they choose to stay at home and make bubble gum, it doesn't necessarily mean the man in their life is going to be coercively controlling them or restricting how much access they have to money and stuff. Do you know what I mean? It's like choosing an extreme example, sort of, maybe to try and discourage. Like, I'm thinking, if there is a woman at home now listening to this who sees themselves in that traditional role, that we could be damaging her and how she feels about herself by saying that's not the way it should be.
Yeah, so just to say from the outset, obviously a trad wife is different to a housewife. So a trad wife is like a Stepford Wives.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah,
type of it. And I take your point that it might make some women happy, and that's fine. But the main issue here is the misrepresentation of it. First of all, again, most people can't afford to take on that kind of lifestyle. And also, it's, I mean, both my grandmothers raised 8 to 9 children each, and there is nothing simple about that, and there's nothing easy about that. So it's a total misrepresentation of the amount of work that it takes, the amount of effort that it takes, and how difficult it is. Yeah. It's certainly not an easy life, and it's certainly out of the two lives, if you were to choose maybe a life where you work and you also raise a family, or you focus solely on your family, the latter is certainly not an easier life. And again, a lot of these women who promote this kind of inaccessible lifestyle online, a lot of them have help, a lot of them, as you say, make money from the content that they're promoting online, and a lot of them marry into extreme wealth. One of the biggest trad wife influencers in America, her husband's father owns 3 different airlines, so obviously that's extreme wealth, and these kind of women can afford to not work and still live a very comfortable life. But the reality for most people in Ireland, if they want that kind of luxurious life, they either have to come from generational wealth themselves, they either have to have a lot of inherited wealth themselves, or they need to marry into a family that are very wealthy, or a man that earns significant income to be able to sustain this type of lifestyle for a large family. And another thing to say is that this type of trad wife movement is very, very damaging to men. So when all of the financial pressure is on men, that's very stressful. That can lead to significant anxiety, mental health issues, when this expectation can cause feelings of inadequacy or failure if men struggle to meet all of the financial demands of these households. And don't forget, these households have a lot of children. 8 to 10 children are what's kind of promoted as the ideal type of family. And there's nothing wrong with that. But again, for the vast majority of people in Ireland, that's a lot of a lot of expense, and those are a lot of mouths to feed. And it's very, very demanding for anyone in childcare duties. So for those reasons, I have a huge issue with the misrepresentation of this kind of trend.
Yeah, and it's an amazing how things have changed. Like, you know, 10 years ago, we could have been talking about, you know, we need to crack down on Instagram influencers because someone bought a face cream that was a load of crap, but they trusted someone that said it was good. And now, such is the influence of social media that it's on a scale, these people are making hundreds of thousands of euro from TikTok and X in a different space, but still were the product in it, that it can actually influence societal attitudes. And we can't see it for really the marketing and profit making that actually is. It's remarkable how we've I was going to say how far we've come, but doesn't always mean a good thing. All right, Fiona, listen, if anyone talk to me just briefly about Turn to Me, the services provided, and if people wish to get in contact.
Absolutely. So Turn to Me is a national mental health charity. We provide up to 6 free counselling sessions to adults living in Ireland. And we also offer free and unlimited support groups on anxiety, depression, grief and relationship issues. And all of these services are available for free on our website, which is turntome.ie. That's turn2me.ie.
Thank you so very much indeed. Have a wonderful day. Take care of yourself. That was Fiona O'Malley, CEO of Turn to Me. What do you think about that? 086 60 25,000. Now, yesterday we were talking about the future of GP services in Ardrah. Deputy Thomas Pringle joined us because we know the current GP is retiring, and they themselves are concerned about a continuation of service, the future of staff, what facilities will be used, and so on and so forth. And we got a very brief statement from the HSE. And subsequent to that conversation, we were contacted by a couple of people that claimed to know that a GP has actually been selected and appointed, and actually gave us a date as to when that person is going to start in that position. So that tweaked our interest. So we went back to the HSE just to try and get clarity as well, because the only thing we're interested in here is providing answers and information to people, not to have a go at the HSE or clickbait or anything like that. We are literally just trying to get good information out there. But anyway, this is all we got from the HSC. There is an active recruitment process ongoing to find a replacement GP for Ardrah. No further details will be available until the recruitment process has been formally concluded. So as I say, there are some in the community that believe there is actually a start date for a new GP, but we don't have that situation. Right, so yesterday I suggested to you that there's been an increase in contacts from people who are really struggling to find a home for many reasons. In some cases, it's because, and this kind of happens an awful lot in Inishowen, but not exclusively, the property owner, the landlord, their house is due to go through a demolition and rebuild or some sort of a work, and long-term tenants are being asked to move out. In other cases, the landlord wants to increase rent, and it's beyond the means of the current person living in that house. So they're looking for other houses in the area, and there just seems to be no property out there at all. I had this contact from a person in the Inishowen area. And as I say, this is one of a number, and I just wanted to get clearance from this person before I read this out. And just imagine yourself in this situation. And they say themselves, I am in an awful situation. I'm facing being homeless in October. Me and my two sons. My landlord has defective concrete in his own home, so they have to tumble their house and need to move into the house I'm renting. I've been in this house for 10 years. I'm on the council list for 8. So far, without any luck of getting a house. I'm looking everywhere in and around Inishowen for a house, but no luck. And if a house does come up, people are looking for 800 to 900 euro, which I cannot afford. I'm currently getting HAP, so a lot of landlords won't take us on now, as they're all looking for cash. I'm in a desperate state, going out of my mind, thinking I'm going to end up homeless. My sons are in their 20s, and I'm trying so hard to keep things together. I feel as if I'm failing as a parent. I haven't yet got us a forever home or security for over our heads. I've been on to councillors to try and fight my corner, but with no luck. There's a massive housing crisis, and I know I'm not the only one looking. The reason I'm reaching out to you is maybe you might be fit to highlight us something. I've no backup plan, nowhere to go, so me and my sons are facing homelessness. I've absolutely nowhere to live, and the stress I'm under and the pressure is getting to a point where it is unbearable. Any help in any which way would be very much appreciated. The rent people are looking for is 800 to 1,000 euro and more, and even at them prices, the houses are like hen's teeth. Now, this is a person working in a very important high-stress area, providing care in the community, and they're describing the stress they're under at the moment as unbearable, that they've nowhere else to, they've nowhere to turn. And also, too, and just to counter, they feel like they're failing as a parent. They aren't. I mean, maybe the state is failing you, but you aren't failing as a parent. So rid yourself of that notion. That's not the case. You're working very, very hard, and you're dealing with a crisis that many, many people are in. And Chris is in a similar situation. It's similar in that it's about the availability of a home and the potential for homelessness, almost. Chris, thanks for your time today.
Hi there, Greg. How are you, Nuts? Thank you for taking me on.
Yeah, no, it's very important, Chris, that we highlight these stories, and not everyone wants to speak about it, so I appreciate it. Your situation, it's not just you you're concerned about, it's you and your mum. So what is your situation currently?
We slept in the car last night, Greg.
The both of you or just yourself?
The both of us. I was going to get... my mum did maybe sleep in a friend's or hers house, but it's unsuitable for a disabled person, you know.
So. Have you been in touch with the council in terms of accessing B&B accommodation or anything like that? There is that provision, I think.
Yeah, they refused.
On what grounds, if you don't mind me asking?
They offered us a house there around, I think it was around a month ago. Well, the house was well out of our preference area, for one, and it was completely unsuitable for a person using disabled aids. Had we went into that house, Mum would have been trapped in one room without being able to get out of it, unless she was actually exiting the house.
Right, so just to be clear, you were offered a property, but obviously it sounds completely unusable. Your mother is disabled and would effectively have been bound to one room.
Yes, essentially. That would, when I say one room, I mean she would have been unable to use the toilet.
Yeah, okay. So do you believe it was that decision to say, look, we appreciate the offer, but it's completely unsuitable for me and particularly my disabled mum? Is that the reason why you were being refused any emergency accommodation assistance, do you feel?
Yeah, we went into the office there yesterday, about 11 o'clock yesterday morning, and essentially they said, well, that house, you know, that was suitable house, and we can't really offer you emergency accommodations when that house was there and you didn't take it, and, you know, essentially. But I mean, what do I do? I can't take a house that isn't. So, it's not like you're going to be given a temporary house with the council, you know.
Mm.
You'd be given a house and you're there. You're there. You're stuck there. They ain't going to offer you anything else.
And I thought, you know, people had the right to refuse a house once or twice before they would be sort of penalised in this way.
Same thing. They offered us a house in December. Same thing. Unsuitable for disabled needs.
Right, okay. So you have been offered two properties that were unsuitable, and that's why you find yourself in this situation.
Yes, exactly. I don't know what they're thinking offering us these houses. They know mum's needs. I've had occupational therapists did the report, they wrote up everything, sent it under them, and yet they still offer houses that just aren't suitable.
So you slept in the car last night. What about tonight?
Well, if nothing pops up, I guess it'll be tonight again.
And what's that like?
Not overly comfortable, but it was warm enough, and we had plenty of blankets, and the dogs are all wrapped up too here.
Mm. Now, you have €850 available, which you could pay in rent.
With HAP.
With HAP. But you're struggling, and maybe particularly because of HAP as well, you're struggling to find anywhere suitable for that amount of money, €850 a month.
I found multiple places, like over the... Well, I had about, 5-6 months there to vacate the property. And found multiple places, but none of them will take HAP, or either that, or it's just a case where the house didn't have suitabilities for mum, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one in particular there that was would have been great. It was actually cheaper than the one we're in, but he said not taking anyone that gets social welfare payments.
Mm. I wasn't sure. I was under the impression that wasn't allowed, but...
It isn't allowed, but it doesn't stop them, you know.
Yeah. You're in a desperate situation, Chris, and it's not just you, it's your mother as well. We'll make contact with the council, and maybe they'll comment on this, or maybe they'll say we can't comment on individual matters, but you're certain that the two properties offered to you completely unsuitable for your mother's needs as a person with disabilities?
Yes, exactly, yeah. That's, they won't listen when you tell them these things, you know, no matter what you do. You even get doctor's letters, they still don't listen. You get another OT's report, they still don't listen. They just continuously push this on. That last house they offered us there, even in terms of medical needs, we get to hospitals, it was an hour and 20 minutes from the hospital. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And mum attends a lot of appointments, you know?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I know they say there's a lack of housing and stuff, but I posted on a lot of Facebook pages and stuff, and I got a lot of tips from people about empty houses lying. And believe me, there's no lack of houses lying. They're just lying empty.
How's your mother dealing with it all, Chris?
Yeah, she's She's doing not so bad. She's I'm trying to keep her geared up as best I can, you know.
Is there a particular area, Chris, that you are looking for somewhere to rent?
No, anywhere at all, just in the tech, you know. Okay. Just looking anywhere, any certain kind, even surrounding counties I've been looking, so.
Right, okay, Chris. Well, listen, if we hear anything, but you know yourself, there's so many people in such a desperate situation. There was a time I'd been hopeful that maybe we'd get something. Who's to say we won't? But we'll also make contact with the council as well. I mean, is there not an appeal process that you could say clearly these two properties were not suitable for my disabled mother? It shouldn't preclude you from getting emergency accommodation. I mean, there's plenty of spare hotel rooms and spare B&Bs that are there available. It's quite regrettable. All right, Chris, listen, we'll let you know if we hear anything. All right, bye-bye. Take care, Chris.
Thank you for taking time. Okay.
No, appreciate it. We'll be back with more after this. I'm joined in studio now by Inspector Seamus McGonigal. And we're going to be talking about a new Traffic Watch survey, which we referenced on the show last week. We'll hear a little bit more about that. But the last time Seamus sat in front of me, it's not that long ago. And Seamus, just before we put the mics live, you pointed out that since our last conversation across the country, six more lives have been lost on Irish roads. Such is the reality. It's terribly sad, isn't it?
Yep. Less than a fortnight since I sat here with you before, Greg. And as I said, at least six people have lost their lives in that period. So, like, the carnage continues. And, you know, we're making every effort to publicise it and get people to slow down and wear their seatbelts and whatever. Because you wonder at times what it takes to get the message across to people.
Mm. You mentioned seatbelts. We referenced earlier too, a quarter of drivers who died on Irish roads in the past decade weren't wearing a seatbelt. Now, I mentioned, you know, non-seatbelt wearing is rare. So that one in four drivers who died on Irish roads, and actually there's a number that actually can't be determined, so people can work out from that what that must mean. Non-seatbelt wearing deaths are incredibly overrepresented compared to the amount of people that don't wear seatbelts.
It's skewed completely, yeah. There was an RSA survey recently, and it showed that over 95% of people actually wear seatbelts. Now, there has been a slight decrease in the number of people wearing their seatbelts, but yet 95% plus of people wear their seatbelts. And yet, as you say, the figures are the amount of people involved in fatal collisions who are not wearing their seatbelts is something like 25%. So it's obvious to anyone that the numbers are completely skewed.
And just to reference, the RSA could not determine whether a driver was wearing a seatbelt in 21% of fatalities in the past 10 years. And you've been at the scenes of road traffic collisions, and I think you can, determine the reason as to why that might be.
If I could say, it can be very obvious at times if people had been wearing their seatbelts. They could possibly have walked away without it.
Yes, I get you.
Yeah. You know, and it doesn't take the forensic collision investigators on occasion to show, was that person wearing a seatbelt or not? It's very obvious without going into the nitty-gritty of it.
But you've seen that with your own eyes and your colleagues have, and I think we can, and sometimes we kind of do have to paint that picture. But as you say, at some point, the penny has to drop.
Yeah,
you know,
we have to keep cameras. We speak about these lifesaver offences, and there's four things really. If people slow down and drive at an appropriate speed, if people wear their seatbelts, if people don't take drugs or alcohol before they get in and drive a car, and also they don't be distracted with mobile phones or whatever. Those four simple facts. You know, the amount of people who would be killed on the roads would be minuscule if people adhere to those four simple things.
Mm.
And we're not asking too much. Slow down, wear your seatbelt, don't drink and drive, and don't be distracted by phones or whatever.
Mm, exactly, yeah. Right. An Garda Síochána has launched a new Traffic Watch service. It allows drivers to easily report the dangerous and poor driving of other motorists that they might observe. What do you think about this?
Well, Traffic Watch has actually been in operation since 2001.
Yeah.
And it's been a huge success. There was a telephone number here up until now, and over 45,000 calls have been made in the last...
So it's the online element that's really...
Yes, that's the change. Before this, it was a phone number, and now it's moved online because for any number of reasons. But it's obvious people use online forums now so much compared to the phone. So that's where it's changed. So it's really only been a progression. Now, just for example, 5,000 people actually still made the phone call last year through Traffic Watch. But now it's been relaunched since last week. In terms of it's an online service. So you basically you log into Gardaí and through that you're led through to make the report to the Gardaí about whatever you've seen.
Yep. So and the way I found it, I just put traffic watch in and it was the top result on Google. And I kind of whilst I was on air, Seamus went through the criteria. You know, there's a couple of things you have to click, and I think the third or fourth thing you have to click is, are you prepared to give a Garda statement and go to court? Do you think that puts people off? I mean, obviously, you know, people have to stand by what they say. I get that. Is there any way around that, or is that a deterrent? As of, you know, you will know from phone the phone system, I suppose.
If I could just skip back a second.
No problem. Whatever you question. Want to say, Seamus.
And it's not for emergency cases.
Okay, that's really important.
You know, that's really important. Yeah. If it's an emergency case, it's 112-999. You make that call right away. These are for the. You know, the other things, you see somebody overtaken on a continuous white line at the brow of a hill, somebody's tailgating, you know, they're the type of items. They're not immediate life-threatening situations, but yet they are dangerous at the same time. Okay. So getting back then to the question you asked me, Greg, in terms, yes, you're led through the site and ask you, do you wish to make a statement or not? And a statement that obviously leads to, or could lead, potentially leads to going to court. Yes, it's preferable that if you do see these things and you report it, that you would make a statement of complaint when approached by the Gardaí later. It would be preferable because, again, we have to gather up as much evidence as possible, all available evidence to bring things to court. But even for people who are unwilling to tick that box, as it were, to make that statement, it can still lead to a successful outcome from our perspective. And then we can go to the other person involved, the driver. We can give them an informal caution. The very fact that they're aware that we know that the driving may well slow them down, have a positive effect. And also, you make your complaint and we as a result of that, may be able to observe other witnesses or CCTV or whatever, which would lead success to it anyway. And then I could also just clarify the fact, even though you're making a statement, somebody might have dash cam footage in their car, for example. Okay, you don't want to make a statement, but the statement actually only entails that you have dash cam footage, you gave it to Garda McGonagall, and that's the extent of it.
I get you. You know. And I presume, and I know people are cynical about different things, and I get that, right? But I presume that this is about maybe over time changing driving behaviour as well. That, in other words, you don't necessarily have to have a squad car or a member of the Garda to see you, in that people, it might change some people's driving habits.
Exactly.
It's not about flushing the courts with people, Not at all.
It's to let the irresponsible driver know that just because there isn't a patrol car or a go safe van or whatever in the vicinity, that he can still end up getting into bother with the law, being convicted of an offensive dangerous driver or whatever. It's just to create that awareness out there.
What happens with the complaint once it's logged?
I'll go through it actually nitty-gritty.
Go on. It's not harm to know the background.
These online reports, they're logged by Garda staff at the Garda Information Services Centre. They're basically call centres, for want of a better word. And they're then sent to the relevant community engagement area. But for example, the local Garda headquarters, whether it be Letterkenny, Buncrana, Milford or whatever. The superintendent then in that area will appoint a member from Garda Síochána to investigate the actual complaint that was made, the traffic watch complaint that was made. So the investigating member then makes contact with the complainant, the driver who makes the report, establish the driver's version of events, establish if there were other witnesses to the alleged incident, discuss the possible actions available, and to take a written statement of complaint if the person is willing to do so. And there's a following up investigation then. The Garda Síochána does give a commitment that we will call back to the complainant to let them know actually what happened. Because that has been an issue in the past, in fairness, where people made the complaint.
They'll
find out one way or another what the outcome was.
And as you say, the phone line has proved successful. As you say, a lot of people are operating and moving online, and the aim is collectively that we reduce the amount of knocks on the doors.
We're appealing to the vast majority of people out there who are responsible road users, that if they see something scary, for want of a better word, that
I think we've all seen
yeah, it.
That fella's going to kill someone, or that girl's going to kill someone.
Rather than make that complaint now, make that report. Don't sit back and imagine how you'd feel if that vehicle that you see and you don't make the report is involved in something serious. Either that day or some other day, it could be some young driver that by the very fact that the guard's calling to his door, it's going to slow him down and cut himself on for a bit again.
Why is it with the technology we have now that when we get into a vehicle that it will not start until all seat belts are put on? Well, I mean, you could do that. It might work. But the reality is most people, firstly, are compliant. But secondly, there are people go to scrap yards and get seat belt buckles and plug them in. I'm not encouraging anyone to do it. I think it's pretty common knowledge. So I think we kind of also have to sort of say, well, what's our responsibility in this? You know, what should we be doing? And, you know, we have to put our seatbelts on.
Yeah, it's incumbent on everyone, not just to put your own seatbelt on, but make sure every other person in that car has
it. I don't think there's people driving around with the beep constantly in modern cars. Do you know what I mean?
I don't think so.
If people aren't using a seatbelt, they're doing something else, pulling across the passenger seat or something. Yeah, you know yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, Inspector Seamus McGonagall, I know you come in here and the aim every time is just to try and save lives, and we do appreciate your time. And it's a measure. We can't really measure it, but I'm sure it has had and is having an impact, even though sometimes it feels like it isn't. So we do appreciate your time.
And I'd like to thank you, Greg, too, and everyone in Highland Radio, because, again, the message is repetitive, but we have to keep being repetitive and getting that message across. Because, like, really and truly, the amount of people that are losing their lives on the roads at the moment is just beyond anyone's comfort zone. Like, there's just far too many people dying.
It's devastating for the person to lose their chance to live out their life in full, but the families and the communities too, the ripples and kids and their children. You know, my mom's not coming home now because such and such happened. It's heartbreaking. Okay, thank you very much, Inspector Seamus McGonagall. We'll be back with more after the news and obituary notices.